A lot of you out there, and a lot, most of the people you know, have been engaging in coonery and buffoonery, and it wasn't until tonight that you found that out. Well, now it's your opportunity to speak on this. We're going to go ahead and open up the phone lines for you now. The telephone number is 646-787-1933. That's 646-787-1933. It's your personal access code to the blackest radio program in existence, the only one of its kind on planet Earth today. Join us. Let's go ahead and open up the phone lines here. Caller from 347, you're on live with the Black Channel.
Oh, this is David McFall. I saw something on YouTube. It was someone coming to a council
and was talking about his people.
And it seemed to be like a slave going to his master.
And telling him somebody is causing problem.
And I'm like, wait a minute.
Why do you got to go to... It kind of didn't make any sense to me. And then I realized, well, that's what they used to do on a slave plantation. You got to go to your master and tell... And go and... You can't deal with your own... It's very complicated because I didn't understand it. And I begin to understand this is what a lot of us gonna have to deal with. And the reason why you're having trouble
understanding it is because you don't understand the coon mind, which is a good thing in a lot of ways. But in a situation like this, you don't understand that. You have to understand that that is the way that coonery works. Coonery seeks out ways. Coonery exists in a parallel universe where you can't be white, but you don't want to be black.
Yep.
B, you want to be that which you never can be, and you are trying to run like hell from the only thing you can be.
Wow.
So what they have done instead is they've adopted a, you've heard of matter and antimatter. Well, they've adopted a black anti-black persona. And what you said about that slave nigga mindset, that everything for them revolves around how do I come back to white people for approval? How can I do something that makes them happy?
Mm-hmm.
Now, what you're referring to is the fraud was up in Myrtle Beach in front of a white city council talking to them about what they need to do to black folk. And someone sent the video and whatnot, and at first I was like, you know, I don't talk about folk who are way below me. My numbers clearly demonstrate that. But it was shameful and sad to see black males, even one as pathetic as this, be reduced, that they've just gone so far over the line for attention that they break out the Sambo boots. I mean, seriously, if you, just like you did, when you see that kind of thing, you're like, wait a minute, that's not a joke, and that's not cute, man.
No, it's not.
That's not cute at all. You have gone off to go find one of the whitest cities you can, only black face standing up talking. The council chamber is practically all white, and you are talking to white people, telling them, and don't let anybody tell you that this is a racial thing. So you're telling white folk, you go get them Negroes. And nobody tell, I'm black. I'm telling all of you that I got you covered. So if anybody asks any questions, play this video so you can show them we can't be racist. See, there was a black guy who co-signed us. Uncle Clarence Thomas.
I just want to say one thing, actually. Maybe, it's certain things that got me problems. My problem is this person said this movie's supposed to be out in July, and it's coming to be July soon. And if this movie doesn't come out, then this person is a liar, a complete liar. And, I mean, if the movie he puts out is a bad movie, then he just put out a bad movie. But I realize that there's not going to be no movie. So, here's the explanation that I heard, that he was having problems. Then the person said, well, because of this. And then he's making up all these excuses, and I'm like, it could be a half-assed movie, and I couldn't care less. At least he made a movie. At least he even put out a product. But it just seemed like, well, all this money was coming in. He said, well, I'm not going to. Well, man, I said I'm going to make a movie. No, I saw the money. I'm going to take the money. And I'm sitting there going, wait a minute. Now, I hear you, and I understand, I respect you. But at the same time, you made a movie. Your movie's going to come out. Now, I'm sitting there going, I haven't yet sat there myself and say, no one yet has been asking this guy when this movie coming out. So, not only this guy is a liar and a coon, that no one is calling out on this man that this movie is going to come out. He's making excuses. He's making one excuse after the next excuse, after the next excuse. And I'm like, how many excuses does this guy can have? Can you give me an excuse? What is he going to do?
All I can say is the past is the best indicator of the future. And we live in a situation where, going back to what I was saying before, you've got a bunch of coons around you. That's what coonery does. Coonery attracts other coons. And what do they do? Ha, ha, ha. He, he, he. He, 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 he. Everything is laugh, laugh, laugh. Even when somebody is being egregiously injured, that we're messing people out of tens of thousands of dollars and you folks are still sitting here laughing? There's nothing funny about that. That's not funny. That's not funny. You're not supposed to be sitting there laughing when other people have been injured. You're not supposed to be laughing at that.
No, it's not.
I mean, what kind of monster, what kind of Satan sits up and is laughing, and we've got a group of people out there, mostly raised by black females, oh, the irony, and that's what they're doing. That is what they're doing. So you're going to have a number of people who are talking about this stuff, but it's going to come out badly for them. Now, in my case, like I say, I don't talk about it. I just show people what I'm doing. I don't have to talk about it. But as black people, we have a situation where we're laughing at stuff we shouldn't be laughing at. We're laughing at stuff we should not be laughing at. Because this stuff is not cute, it's not funny, it's not amusing, and everybody should be on the same page. But right now, you've got a bunch of folk who are so brainwashed and brain dead that they are eager to be entertained. And that's why I ran those people off from over here. I don't want people who want to be entertained. I want people who can think. I've got proof of everything I'm doing. Why is it that these people are not demanding the same? They're not demanding the same because coons of a feather
flock together.
That's why the behavior doesn't change from chief coon to the little coon followers. The behavior does not change. Now, they don't like each other. Everybody sits there not liking each other, which is all they do. They sit up and fling feces at each other. That's what coons do.
Yeah.
But beyond that, they don't have anything. Beyond that, they don't have anything. But you understand I want you to understand that you need to recognize coonery when you see it also. You need to recognize foolishness when you see it. And you also need to recognize exactly who the enablers are. You have to recognize the enablers. All the little people in the gallery throwing peanuts to the chief monkey. All the people out there laughing and guffawing at it. Those people are part of infrastructure. They're part of that system where they find a chief goof and back them. And the white folks sit back smiling because you're not a threat. What was the threat to white supremacy on display in there? What was it?
I didn't see it.
So when you said it was like a slave in Massa's living room with their hands all down, all humble, yes, Massa Bossa, I wanted to tell you what they're doing out there.
That's exactly what I saw.
When you were saying to yourself, man, this all feels a little too familiar, that was your knowledge of history speaking to you. Because you have to understand, at the end of the day, the way psychosis works is that at the end of the day, the truth comes out. At the end of the day, the truth is going to come out. Donald Sterling did not want black folk at his... The truth was not that Donald Sterling did not want black folk in his buildings. The truth was that Donald Sterling did not want black people in his life.
No, he didn't.
And all V. Stiviano did was show you that the behavior at his apartment buildings was not a fluke. That he can tell you whatever he wants to. But the truth is, he does not want black folk around, period. And that was what the truth finally came out as. Coonery is going to do that. Coonery hates intelligence. Coonery hates competence. Coonery loves hoes. Coonery loves hoeing. Coonery loves savagery. And that is exactly what you end up with. So if you want to know the real reasons behind all this, I would direct you to ask the white women. That's who I'm directly to ask.
But can I ask you a question? Why do you believe that Sterling, as much as he, as what they say, he's a racist? I don't doubt that. It's just that when I saw this, the reason why it looked familiar to me, I saw enough slave movies to see a slave operate in slavery. I've been able to rationalize. Look, I don't think I'm the most intelligent person, but I don't think I'm not dumb, but I'm not stupid. I'm not saying that I'm the smartest person, but what I'm just trying to say is, Donald Sterling wrong not to want to have black people around him if he feels that way about that? Is he wrong to feel the way he feel in some sense or somewhat? Is he wrong to feel that way?
Well, here's the way I feel about it. Either you're all in or you're all out. Now, either you're going to sit here and this is what you stand for, or you're full of garbage. But if you don't want black folk around, you need to just be like it is. But don't come around my people and yet you are disrespecting my people. Because he wasn't just like that about the apartments, okay?
Yeah.
I mean, these were the NBA players making money for them. All of them model citizens and doing their thing. And yet he had greasy stuff to say about them, too.
Oh, I forgot to tell you, he also agreed on the fact that what Sterling said was right. I'm not saying this man was right. All my notion is that people are making money for him. He didn't want certain guys being around her because
when he told her, don't bring black folk to the games.
Okay.
He's letting you know, I don't really want nothing to do with them. They can work for me and make money for me, but I will not tolerate them beyond their utility. He does not respect them as human beings. He does not respect us as human beings.
Well, let me ask a question.
Speaking of that, the fraud thought that was wonderful too, by the way. Amazing how the fraud was all in line with Zimmerman and Sterling and whatnot. Very, very interesting, some of those responses of things, but don't expect his little peanut throwers and feces flingers to to catch on to that. They're not a very bright bunch over there. By the way, do you notice that nowadays when you go to his posts, you'll notice that you'll see half and half white folk and black folk? Did you notice? Did anybody notice that? I had somebody point that out the other day, and I was like, I'm not surprised. Have you noticed that uptick in Caucasian support? Now, not that they're going to do anything, by the way. They just know how to pull somebody's strings. See, coons know what to do to get white folk to jump up and clap for them. They know what to do. See, Rihanna knows how to coon herself, which is where I was going earlier. She knows how to coon herself.
Oh, yeah.
That's why she's out there in a dress, in some damn plastic dress that you can see through now and see all her goodies. She knows how to coon for the white cameras. She knows how to do that. And
don't you call that prostitution?
Yeah, but I mean, but coons understand how to keep their position. It's like being on a football team. Coons understand how to keep their position. Doc Rivers understood how to keep his position. You just practically got called nigga by your boss in front of the world, and your response is, go back to picking the cotton, y'all. Don't make no trouble. See, that was the truth. That was the truth coming out. Donald Sterling understood what Doc Rivers was going to do. And he understood what all the players on his team were going to do. He did not understand what the society at large was going to do. But he's made those remarks because he understood that that was the way things were in the NBA. And that's the way that things are on that team. He was never under any fear that they were ever going to boycott that game, ever. See, he understood that. The rest of people didn't, but he understood it. And that's why he responded the way that he did. Because he knew nothing was going to come of it. And guess what? Nothing did.
It's $2 billion richer.
The other side of coonery, the people who watch. The people who watch. The people who laugh. The people who cheer. The people who imitate it. Other side of coonery. When you begin to take on that coon persona, and then you're one of the people who thinks it's cool, that's the other side of coonery. That's the other side of it. That's why I don't encourage laughing and joking here at the Black Channel. I want this to be a totally different type of experience. I'm not interested in people who want to be entertained. I could give a damn about you wanting to be entertained. I could give a damn about that. I hold myself and I hold everybody here to a higher standard than that. And we as Black people have accepted a coonish mindset. Well, how do you know you have a coonish mindset? When you are behaving like a coon in situations that have nothing to do and do not involve white people at all, that's when you've accepted a coonish mindset. Take a look at the type of personality that you have to be to make white supremacy comfortable with you, and then see how many situations in your life that you're applying that behavior to in which white people are not around and are nowhere to be seen. Think about that for a minute, brother. Think about that. Now, how many times have you seen Black folk doing that?
A lot of times. I mean, when you look at some people, they're too easy to want to please them. I just don't understand that because, I mean, is it the fact is that they have something called the Jesus complex where the master, when they look at the, I remember as a young boy, the story of Good Times where he had the picture of Jesus was disputed that it was a black man. And they turned into more of a joke because, and then the woman was saying, no, he's white. And he says, no, in the Bible it states what color he is. And he brings it to the revelation, and he says he has woolly hair. He says, who does have woolly hair? And then he has eyes of flame, and then so on and so on. And then it comes out, he drew a picture of a guy who was an alcohol, and he said, yeah, he would have eyes of red because he's drunk. And then they turn over to JJ, and he says, well, they claim Jesus, he was from the lost tribe of Israel, and the lost tribe. And then he turned around and said, anybody would be lost, it would be us. And it's like, they turned it into coonery and buffoonery. And it made it seem like it was all a joke. But there was some seriousness of it, where you were getting some form of teaching where, okay, we're going to put this in your face, or we're going to make it into a nothing but a joke. But they have the little kid there saying all this. So it can be, well, we don't take him really seriously. Everybody there was playing buffoon and coonery, but the little kid Michael was serious. And like, why does he have, well, you know what? We can't count him. He's just a little boy. So we can make him not be taken seriously. So it's like it's all a mock. And my problem is we have the same scenario in our house. We have this picture of this guy standing up in our house, and he's a picture of Jesus knocking on your door. A guy sees your son, bonjour. And I'm like, wait a minute. If this is a Middle East guy, how is it he's going to look like this? The guy looks like Ted Nugent. And my brother ended up breaking the picture because he was upset about it. My father comes home and decides to tear his behind up. How dare you do this to this picture of this precious man? And I'm like, this is what we have. See, we have a worship of a people because the first thing they did was allowed us to worship an image of a false image of a person, and you connect to him. So you see these people as godlike. That's how I see it.
White society understood very early on how to create a coon. They understand the cost, benefit, and reward punishment system. They understand that. And that's why they reinforce it the way that they do. They understand how to throw enough bones to get attention. They understand that. And what you were referring to before is, as Dr. Claude Anderson reminded us, that's meritorious manumission. The idea that I can get favor from white people if I hate blackness and denigrate it and betray it as much as they would. That I can get my freedom through white people by showing them that I have as much disdain and disrespect for black people as they do. That's the way it works. I'll let you have the last word, brother.
I just want to be able to... I just like to say that unfortunate, I think I've been entertained enough. I think it's time to be very serious, and I think it's important to be able to learn and not, I think we have gotten in places as a people that want to party too much, we want to celebrate too much, we want to drink too much. Matter of fact, we want to party more than ever, and I think it's important for us to be, you know, learners of society, and I think it's important to be able to study and understand what is really going on here. And I don't think we should all want to be like each other. We seem to be one of opinion all the time. We don't want to grow as a people. We don't want to see anything. All we want to do is be exactly like each other. So when one thinks differently, he gets, I would say, assaulted and abused. That's all I have to say.
Well, not just that you think differently, but that you think higher. Nobody has a problem with different as long as it's low. Bestial. Lowest common denominator. You're fine. When you start thinking higher, that's when all of a sudden they have a problem with you. But
you think
that's called leadership.
You think I continue listening to this after you?
Sure. You can stay on the line if you want to. That's fine.
Okay. Thanks a lot.
go ahead and grab another caller here. I think we have a caller on Skype. You're on live with the Black Channel. Okay, caller, you're on live. Okay, probably not. Caller from 702, you're live with the Black Channel.
Hello, Jason. Devontae calling from Las Vegas, Nevada.
What's on your mind, brother?
The Black Bike Week, I was reading an article and how they were saying it's time to get rid of this, violent, criminal Black Bike Week. And everybody, and I got friends that are avid motorcyclists, black and white, Latino. Like, when they say that 99%, that is true. 99% of bikers are guys that go to work, doctors, lawyers, construction workers, bankers. That's 99% of your bikers, black or white, doesn't matter. That 1% element, those are people that they make criminal bike gangs. Now, for you to say, let's get rid of this criminal Black Bike Week, no, let's get rid of the criminals in Black Bike Week. It's what should have been said.
Yeah,
we need to step up and help, but still.
They see that as an opportunity. Okay, we got some feedback coming from your phone there. We're going to need to address that. If you got speakers on or something, you need to turn them off. But we're getting feedback from that phone you're on.
I might have touched hello?
Yeah, we're getting too much feedback from that phone, brother. If you got it on Bluetooth or something, you can take it off.
No, it's just, did it stop yet?
No, I don't think it has. Yeah, I don't think it's out.
Yeah, because it's doing it. I'm not on speaker or anything. Let me try to put it on mute real quick and then take it off. Hold on.
Well, the thing is about them using that phraseology, about Black Bike Week. Okay, no, that's still doing that. I think that's let me check here and make sure.
That's me.
Yeah, I don't think that's you either. Okay. The reason why that phraseology is important is because, understand, they believe in targeting black people. So when they deal with their own people, it's a scalpel. But when they deal with you, it's a sledgehammer. It's a wrecking ball. Because the goal is to get all of you. That's why Tariq Nasheed was talking about in New York, they wanted to start these all-in laws where one person commits a crime and everybody with them, we can get them too. So if somebody sits up here and does something and you're just standing by, if a black person commits a crime and you're unfortunately left to be black and in the vicinity, well, guess what? They can grab all of you now. They can get all
legally.
Of you.
Legally, but they do that anyways. But legally,
yep,
they could do it now.
They can get all of you in a situation like that. They're not trying to be precise. When black people are involved, the goal is to get your black ass in jail. The crime is being black. The crime is not whatever they said it was. When you are born as a black person, from the school system to the court system to your job, they let you know that they got lethal intentions for you. And when you see one black person sitting up here indicting a whole group of black people on behalf of white folk, understand that's white supremacy at work. So you have a situation here where they want to talk to you, but they only want to talk about how can we get as many of you as possible. Now, when they have the bikers go up to Sturgis, and the Hells Angels and the rest of them, the Hells Angels is legally recognized as a criminal organization. You've never heard them talk that way about the Hells Angels. Spring break. The white kids can get out there and burn stuff down. Spring break, they can get out there and burn things down. And you have never had a college town talk about stopping spring break, ever. Stanley Cup, guaranteed riot. And you have never heard white folks talk about stopping a championship. But where black people are involved, they want to talk about how can we turn this into an opportunity to demonize black people across the board. And we should be saying we're not going to give up any ground. Two white kids can march into a school in Littleton, Colorado. Gun down a couple of dozen people. And the NRA says you will not do anything about our gun rights because it's our right. And then we can go Pearl, Mississippi. And then you got Newtown. And we can go down the list. And white folks say, you're not going to demonize us across the board. But when it's black people, they want to demonize us and say that the problem is it's Black Bike Week. That's the real issue.
Now, I don't believe that's the actual name, but that's the name they gave to it. But like I said, I'm from Las Vegas, and people forget about that shootout in the casinos in Laughlin with the Hells Angels and the Mongols. I'm talking about they was going at it. Shootout, hammers, knives. And you know what they said? Oh, well, we're going to enforce police presence. We're going to make sure this doesn't happen, but we're not stopping the River Run. That ain't going to happen. But we're going to make sure this doesn't happen at the River Run again. And that's pretty much what their statement was on that issue. And that's, they always have issues with the River Run. They might not televise it. They had to televise that. It was in the middle of a casino. People are getting found in motel tickets, getting found down on a Boulder Strip. And stuff always happens when they have the River Run, but they don't televise it. Not like that. Maybe locally a little bit. So, I mean, I know exactly what they're doing and why they're doing it. But, I mean, black people, I mean, to a certain extent, all I'll say is we need to take care of business when it comes to that. Like, look, get the criminal element out of your party. Tell them, look, you ain't invited here. But y'all not finna paint us with a broad brush like that. You're talking about 1% out of 99%, and it's time for that to stop. You're not finna keep painting us with this broad brush. The stupids are the stupids, and we'll deal with them, but you're not finna deal with us like we're the stupids. And a lot of black people don't understand that. I mean, a lot of black people are so willing to co-sign it. Oh, yeah, black people. Wait, hold on a second. I'm sitting here. There's probably about, you know, 8 black people that I work with, and I'm sitting here, not one of us are like anything that anybody could portray as a black stereotype other than, you know, a southern guy that has an accent or anything like that. But other than that, there's no criminal element there. There's no idiots there. But these guys would sit there and say, well, yeah, that's right. But I'm like, okay, wait, look at all these other black people that work here. None of them are like that. So if we have all these black people walking around here, none of you are like that, but you're just letting people tell you that that's your society. That makes no sense. How can you co-sign something like that? Look, that's a stupid person, black or white, whatever you want to call it. That's a stupid person, and that stupid person needs to be dealt with, point blank, period. But don't try to paint me with a broad brush because that person is stupid. I don't care if they're in the NFL. I don't care if they're just a nut off the street. Doesn't matter. Stupid is stupid, and I don't co-sign stupid, no matter what color you are. But don't try to paint me with a broad brush because you see a stupid black person. I don't paint anyone with a broad brush because they're stupid. And if anyone could be painted with a broad brush, believe me, it could be white supremacy. I mean, your history proves it. And I still don't paint you with a broad brush. I still ask questions, and I try to say, okay, hold on, let me step back. I'm not going to call you a racist because you're white, but let me see what you do. Now we can talk. So what's going on? Why are you doing what you're doing? Okay, you can't tell me why you're doing what you're doing. Well, I'm going to have to, you know, suspect you as being a racist, so I'm going to get away from you. I'm going to do everything I can to do in my power to make sure you and me are not associated. Because you don't seem to have my best interest in mind. And if we have to be associated, I'm going to keep my eye on you. And I think a lot of black people, they lose that, and that they're so willing to cower down and be like, oh, well, you know, they're just joking, or they're my buddy, or they're my friend. I'm like, I had a couple of friends, and my friends don't act like that. My friends don't treat me like that, and I don't treat them like that. I don't know what you're doing. So if that's what you're doing, you need to stop. And a lot of people, they're not willing to take that stand. And they're not willing to be forceful. Like, I had a friend that I was dealing with, and, you know, he's a cool white guy. But after a while, he starts taking these, you know, shots in the dark. I'm like, dude, what you talking about? Oh, no, I'm just joking. Well, why are you joking like that? You know me for 5 years. Have I ever distributed any of those characteristics? Well, you know what I mean. No, I don't know what you mean. That's why I'm talking to you right now. I'm asking you clearly, what do you mean? And why are you saying these things? he couldn't come up with an answer, and he kept trying, oh, I don't mean anything about it. Well, you keep on saying it. So eventually I just stopped talking to him. And he goes, you're the real problem? There's no problem. You know, you're good, I'm good. It seems to me that you don't want to be my friend. It seems to me that we don't have common interest anymore, so it seems to me that we don't need to associate anymore. Simple point blank. There's no time for me to sit here and cower down to you and say, well, you know, he's a good guy. No, listen, I'm not going to take shots in the dark if you don't take shots in the dark at me. I'm not going to sit here and co-sign any stupidity with you. You don't need to co-sign stupidity with me. We can either be friends or we can't, black or white. And I realize that it's very difficult to hold a friendship, you know, with the dominant society. For some reason, they at a point in time, they will feel threatened, especially if you're a little bit smarter than them, or even if you're just equal to them. It threatens them. Because they're so used to, if I have a black friend, he's like my little pet, he's my buddy, and I could do things, and I could joke, and, you know, I could act certain ways with him that I can't do with other white people, because other white people are going to challenge me, because they feel they're my equal. And when a black person challenged them, they're like, wait, man, what's going on? That's not, why are you acting stupid? What do you mean? Anybody should challenge you if you're acting stupid. I thought we were cool, so I see we're not cool, so we're just not going to be cool anymore. I'm going to go about my business, and you'll go about your business. We don't need to be friends, and we sure as hell don't need to be enemies, but if that's what you want to do, let's do that. But I'm not going to come out here trying to be just, you know, attacking you, but I'm not going to let you attack me. That's just not going to happen. And that's what the society seems they always want to do with black people. Black people don't have to attack white people for any reason. It's unnecessary. Look, do what you're going to do. If you want to be fair and honest and you want to say we live in this rainbow society, then do that. But don't come with the BS and the lies and you know, the half-truths. I mean, the numbers don't play it out anyway. So if the numbers not playing it out, you can't keep saying, well, we're doing good, but we can always do better. Why is it always we're doing good, but we can always do better? We should be doing A-OK. I mean, a man should be judged on his character, and that doesn't seem to be happening. So I can't co-sign what's going on in society. I don't think anybody else should. I mean, everybody wants to sugarcoat things, but it's unnecessary. The numbers don't play it out. The people that, you know, live in the society don't play it out. And everybody seems to be walking on eggshells, you know. Okay, I mean, Malcolm X said it best. We're going to play this game. Okay, I'm going to try to fool you to act like, you know, I don't understand what you're doing. And you're going to try to fool me and act like you're not doing what you're doing. Okay, let's keep playing that game for another 400 years. I mean, seriously? That's why black people need to say, hey, just take care of yourselves right now. Let's get our stuff together, and then once we're on an equal level, then we'll see how this works out. I mean, to be friends with someone, first of all, you got to be an equal.
The idea is for you not to be. Look, they're going to seize on every opportunity. If black folk were sitting up here making nothing but straight A's and honor roll students, you'd never hear it on the news. They would never talk about it at city council, whatever. They are only going to mention us when it's an opportunity to slap sanctions on us, when it's an opportunity to demonize us, when it's an opportunity to oppress us. That's the only time they want to discuss us. The only time. That's the only time that we ever come up as a topic of discussion is when there's an opportunity to demonize us. But we are not going to come up for anything else. And that's why we have to take a, you know, zero tolerance approach to lose the ground. We have to take a zero-tolerance approach to that. And that's why when you see folk acting a fool and whatnot, white folk have... When have you ever heard white folk say that the problem is white biker week with the white bikers? That if the white college students, it's just the college students. You never hear them say that the shooter was white. When the shooter is black, you find out immediately. So they never mention us. There is never going to be a humanizing element where we're concerned. We get the benefit of no doubt. You get no benefit of the doubt whatsoever. That's always the way it is.
And if I might say this, Jason, it was weird because I was just watching Fox News. I had nothing to do, and I'm sitting downstairs. I remember I watched a report on the incident of Black Bike Week the day before, and the way that they stated it was, oh, you know, there was a fight, and there must have been two assailants inside of a motel room, decided to shoot outside the motel room, and the three people that got killed and the one person that got wounded. And they just said the shooters did this, this, and this, and these guys we're looking for, these are the people that are the shooters. I mean, then they said, you know, they said suspected, And then they kept saying, after they said suspected once and kept saying shooter, shooter, shooter. Then they did a special on Fox about the young man that was killed by the old Ku Klux Klan member, him and his granddad. And they kept saying, allegedly, every time they mentioned that man's name, the alleged shooter, the alleged this, the alleged that. And I'm like, this dude was a Klan member, just walked up on this Jewish center and started blasting all these people. And every single time they mention him, they say alleged. This is the alleged shooter instead of just saying the shooter. Okay, I know the trial hasn't gone through or anything, but these people haven't even been caught yet. And you're not saying alleged. You're saying they did it. And this man, he's on tape. He's in the cars talking about, you know, Heil Hitler, and you're still calling him the alleged shooter. Even though we know he did it pretty much, and when he goes to court, whatever happens, happens. But still, you have enough, you know, restraint and respect for this Klansman to say the alleged shooter every time you mention him and talk about the incident. Even though you're supposed to be highlighting that this young man's going to be taking his video to a singing contest so they could put his video there since he's no longer with us. And I'm like looking at Fox News, like, wow, okay, this is fair and balanced, reporting. That right there is just completely obvious. I mean, if people can't see this, I mean, deaf, dumb, or blind or something. But I think people can see it. They don't want to see it. They don't want to deal with it. They want to live a comfortable life and be left alone. I mean, this is for most people, racism and racist white supremacy is scary. It's terrifying. Even for good white people, it's terrifying. They don't want to deal with it. They want to be apathetic. Look, I don't have to deal with it. I'm really not trying to deal with it. I'm trying to get away from it. That's what most good white people do. And then the black people, they're like, man, if I could evade this, if I could elude this, I'm going to do it. I don't want a piece of it at all. I might not co-sign it, but I'm going to try to run away from it every chance I get. I can't face this head on. And those are some of the gigglers and the laughers and the snickers and you can see it in their eyes. This isn't cool, but I'm just going to laugh it off and then walk away real quick so I don't have to talk to these people anymore. And that seems to be the major way that a lot of the old black people deal with it. I mean, a lot of the old black people, you can actually see the fear in their eyes when they're actually just talking to an average white person. I'm like, dude, you're just talking to this white guy and okay, now he's giving you some instructions, and I mean like a basic manager. I'm like, wow, you're acting like at any time he could just backhand you or something. Like, this man is really, like, superior to you. And it's weird to see him talk to him like that, so I'm like, wow. Even when it comes to people that we're, you know, pretty much just the same. I mean, we're the same position, we're the same everything, and they still have this behavior. It's almost like cowardice. It's just they're afraid.
Well, the truth is that they are. Fear among black people, and particularly black men, of white supremacy is a family tradition. It's a family tradition now. It is part of the culture. Sitting there with these big, wide open, staring, terrified eyes of white folk as if we're just a bug and they're going to squish us, step on us. That is the black psyche and disposition toward white society. They learned it from their fathers and their grandfathers that the way, one of the mechanisms that you can use to circumvent white wrath is to look harmless, non-threatening, endlessly humble, and the second that they look displeased, you are supposed to look terrified. Not apprehensive, not uncomfortable, not just afraid, terrified. You have to be terrified. The reason why I rub so many people the wrong way when it comes to blackness is because I define it in a manner that is uncompromising. It's uncompromising. I will say this, and then I'll move on off of that. But just to make one thing clear about being terrified, in case you all didn't notice, the fraud put up dozens of pictures with a white woman. You never saw the fraud ever do that with a black female. You could count on one hand. And actually, one hand with enough fingers to drink coffee left over. You see, when you make it your daily practice to coon and buffoon, to seek meritorious manumission, that you have elevated white supremacy to the level of gods, it comes out in everything you do. So you should be able to show me dozens of pictures with everybody, and yet you can't do that. You can't do that because it's not there, because that is not the truth coming out. The truth is, I hate niggers as much as these white people do. That is what's waiting to come out. I'm scared and terrified. This is the way that I curry favor. Be scared. Be afraid. Be humble. Bow. Scrape. That is what they were taught to do. And it shouldn't be surprising to anybody at this point. We need to start recognizing the behaviors, which is why I said the other side of coonery. If you are looking for behaviors, you'll never go wrong. You'll never go wrong. Let me try another one here. I've got somebody on the line here. Why does your number say restricted? I've got somebody on here. Why are you playing on my line? Okay. There's folk who do crazy things on the phone and stuff like that. Let me get caller from 313. You're on live with the Black Channel. Okay. Are you still hearing me, Devontae?
Can you hear? Yeah, I can hear you.
Okay.
Can you hear me?
Well, I can hear you now. Yes.
Oh, okay. Yeah, I don't know what happened. I apologize for that. I really do.
Get an Android, sir. Get an Android. Track phone people, I know, is only 11 miles, but...
I have an Android, so, just a Windows phone.
Yeah, but you can't do that Zoom stuff here. I know Metro PCS is discount everywhere, but I need y'all to step up to a Samsung.
Well, either or. I'm here now.
What's your name? Where are you calling from?
My name is Carl, and I'm calling from Detroit, Michigan.
Carl from Detroit on the Zoom. What's on your mind?
Okay. Yeah, I was listening to what you were talking about white folks and being terrified and so on and so forth. And I find that to be truly intriguing because it's not necessarily white folk that many black folk are afraid of. It's the ability to call law enforcement for law enforcement to take control of the situation and put a person in that situation where they're already the suspect. You know what I'm saying? Just like in every time, we walk down the street, you automatically a suspect. Wherever you live, you automatically a suspect, that kind of thing. It's not white folk overall, every regular, everyday white folk. No, we can deal with that. I mean, on the real, I mean, most brothers who, are men going to do it that way. But then it's that extra, and that's where that privilege thing come in at, because they know they can call somebody to come and back them, they lying asses up, excuse me, but I'm just saying overall. Many times.
No, look, it's not about competition, okay? Black people are acting like it's a competition. These folk did not come to play to compete. They just came to win. They didn't come to show you that they're
a
boxer or anything else.
The
goal is just, oh, no, we're not here to play fair. We're not here to play nice. Chivalry is dead, and we killed it, and that's just the way we roll. And that's just the bottom line. There are no rules when white supremacy gets rolling. There are no rules.
Brother.
There is no Geneva Convention. There is no statutes of war. There are no rules of engagement. When white supremacy gets rolling, white supremacy gets rolling.
And I agree on that.
Not,
right there with
they're
you.
Not here to prove that they're better fighters than you. They are here to fill every casket they got over here. To fill every body bag. That is the goal. They could give a damn. That's why you see 6 grown-ass police officers sitting up here cuffing a 16-year-old black child.
All that, on the real, on the real. And see, I used to be in law enforcement, so I know about it. I'm telling you that on the real. Okay. So I know exactly how it works.
Mm-hmm. You were talking about the Game of Thrones the other day with the, I mean, Game of Thrones the other day about the character when they were talking about, oh, this gentleman fought with honor, and other guys were like, well, he did. And you look at our history, that's all black people do. Mm-hmm. Like the real black man, King, everyone else, they stand up, they fight with honor, they fight with dignity, and then they realize these people ain't playing. They came here to win. They don't give a damn about my honor, about my dignity. They don't give a damn if I'm nonviolent. They don't give a damn until it plays into their interest, because technically LBJ wanted to be the great white savior. He didn't like you.
Yeah, I remember that.
He wanted, that was his legacy. He didn't give a damn about you. I'm the great white savior. I'm going to go down in history for this one. That's what
we got a new mayor. We got a new mayor in Detroit that's doing the same thing. You know, so yeah, they know what they be doing. They be working really good and fast.
And black folks laugh. People were laughing. I showed y'all the damn pictures on Facebook.
Mm-hmm.
A bunch of black women behind. I think his name is Duggan. A bunch of black women behind him.
Yeah.
Just laughing and clapping as he was being brought into office. And it's like, they feel like they finally arrived because they see – this is what I meant before about the problem with black feminism and single motherhood and all that subservient, you know, mammy crap. Is that they see themselves – that's coonery in its ultimate personification. They see themselves as the counterpart of the white male power structure.
Yes,
but
sir.
The only way they can exhibit that is meritorious manumission, showing that they are more eager to empower white supremacy than even white supremacy is.
You know, sometimes I watch because you know I'm very active as far as the political situation of going to Detroit. Hello.
Yes. Go ahead.
I'm sorry. Yeah, and the weird part about it, I watch their eyes. I mean, they almost like it's almost like a movie, like the zombie kind of look that they have. You know, it's really weird. But when you watch, you know, you watch when they do the little announcements or whatever, or when they're on television and whoever that's in power, or whatever, a representative, it's like a weird kind of vibe. You know, and most people just don't care. And you know, most people in Detroit, you know, rely on the government for income. You know what I'm saying? And that's one of the problems because, you know, how are you going to fight somebody that you rely on you getting your money from?
Thank you.
You know what I'm saying? Yeah, now, I mean, that's on the real.
I wonder how many people understand the wisdom and the prescience of what you just said. And I
many
go
don't,
into this in 7 a.m. I go into this in our documentary. For those of you who are unaware, 7 a.m. is my life's work. That's going to be a documentary that we'll be releasing. That's the first one.
Oh, I remember. I've seen that. Yeah, I've seen that. Because I follow you on Twitter. I'm sorry, I just meant to say. I follow you on Twitter. And my Twitter handle is True Black Power. So I follow you on Twitter, and I've seen that. I've seen that share. And it was powerful and dynamic. So, okay.
Well, I'll be dealing with that. And one of the things I get into in there is that welfare and food stamps and Section 8, that's a way of white supremacy paying you off to betray your children, to betray your legacy. Why? Because no one ever built wealth being on welfare.
I know.
And if the only thing welfare does is prepare you for a lifetime of poverty.
Yeah.
So you're in a position where they have you under their thumb.
Mm-hmm.
How can you revolt when the system feeds you?
Mm-hmm.
How can
you plot
revolution against the people who are feeding you? And the answer
is
you can't.
Exactly. I call it dependence and docility. And that's the one thing that many brothers, we get into that mode of dependence and docility. You know? You know, I'm guilty of it over the years. You know what I'm saying? I look back over the years and look and see how, you know, you look at, you know, where you've been, what's been going on, and, you know, sometimes people can be cruel and so on and so forth, and then you get into that people-pleaser mode, and you're not able to get to the point where you need to be. But then once you break out, then you have to be careful and know your environment, because I mentioned something that, you know your environment because your environment knows you. You know, be aware of your environment because your environment is aware of you, you know. So whatever situation, even on this call line, it's just, you know, just being aware whom I'm talking to, which, like I said, I've seen it on Twitter. That's why, you know, it was shared, and that's why I'm calling in. And, of course, I listen for a little while, and, you know, like you, you know, make sure that, you know, those who call it ain't playing, ain't, you know, ain't BSing and all that. You know what I'm saying? So I'm right there with you on that, brother. Yeah, I'm right there with you on that.
Well,
I understand fully.
Is shaping up to be the most dangerous and lethal and perilous time in black existence.
What's that? I'm sorry.
The 21st century is shaping up to be the most hazardous and dangerous period of black existence.
On the real, on the real. And the problem with the whole situation is that it's amazing how they've been doing it. And then, you know, when you speak on it, some people there go, oh, you're too negative. It's not I'm being negative. I'm aware. You know what I'm saying? You have to be aware. Because, see, once I'm doing what I need to do and you don't come back and say, hey, look, I need this. God. Just like the story of the ant and the grasshopper. That's the beautiful scenario right there. You know that fable of the ant and the grasshopper? The ants and the grasshopper. And they, you know, the ants are saving food and so on and so forth. And during the summertime, the grasshopper was playing his fiddle and doing whatever he was going to do. And then, you know, the fall came, he still was messing around. Then when the winter came, he came and asked and begged for food. And it was like, you know, well, we told you. You should be, matter of fact, the ants even said, you should be helping us. They didn't say, you know, you go get your own. They said, well, you know what, well, you could participate. And the grasshopper was like, well, no, I got plenty of time. And about the time the winter time came, the doggone grasshopper died. Just that real.
Well, understand, the reason that this is the most perilous time for us, and I want everybody to understand this, especially you as young black people out there listening to this broadcast, your parents have lied to you. Your parents have lied to you because they were cowardly and they were scared. And at this point, your parents are old. They've lived a lifetime of cowardice and fear, and they're really just waiting for their turn to die. They don't have any more fight left in them. They never did. And they're not trying to switch up at the end of their lives and become revolutionaries. They're not trying to do that. Your parents sold you out and making sure that you had no legacy and no future. Well, that was just the cost of getting along with white supremacy. So screw you. Mm-hmm. That's what your parents say. Understand something. The reason that this is the most dangerous and perilous period for Africans ever is because white society has devised a method of extermination that does not shock the conscience. Let me say that one more time for those of you who missed it. White supremacy has devised a method of extermination for black people that does not the conscience.
Yeah, I feel you on that.
It's not something that will have people out there in the streets yelling and screaming bloody murder.
Right.
This is what they've been waiting for.
On the real.
A method of extermination that allows them to wipe you out without people screaming that this is godless, unnatural, inhuman, heinous.
Oh, yeah, on the real. Right, right, right.
Is what they've been waiting for.
Right. Is it a chemical or biological?
It's worse than that. It's economic.
Well, that too.
No, it's not that too. You see, this would be a lot better if this were a chemical, biological weapon. At least we would recognize, okay, we're being assaulted. Let's get up and do something. This is a weapon that relies on your apathy. That if what is in the core of your soul is to truly bow down, if the core of your soul truly says, I don't want to fight, this is a weapon that relies on your unwillingness to fight. Core of your being, if you truly, ultimately do not want to fight, that is what this weapon is created and calibrated for.
Okay.
I was the person who coined the phrase economic bombs. Okay. And New York City has been a masterpiece of economic warfare. I went to downtown Manhattan last year. I'm not telling you what I think. I'm telling you what I saw. I'm telling you what I lived. I only saw a handful of black people walking downtown in Midtown Manhattan, the most expensive real estate on earth, and only a handful of black folk. And guess what? Me and my crew were part of that handful.
Okay, okay.
Now, I
the same thing in Midtown Detroit. Same thing in Midtown Detroit. They just funny that how that works. But,
well, here's my point. There must have easily been, in just that four-block area, there must have easily have been 5,000-6,000 people just on the street. Anybody who's ever been to Midtown Manhattan, it's crowded. You can see it from my video.
Yeah.
The streets is packed. And this was just a random Thursday. Streets
are
packed.
Yeah, I'm sure you're right.
And what I'm saying is that they've been setting off economic bombs. Because the street was Harlem. Mm-hmm. And what you do is you set off a few economic bombs. Well, what is that?
Mm-hmm.
I am going to build a condominium right here on the outskirts of Harlem. I'll build it here. And the fact that I built these brand new condominiums and I'm charging all this money for them is going to do what to the surrounding property values?
Oh, it's going to go up.
Now, in New York City, it doesn't just go up. It skyrockets. In New York City, I'm sitting there with Don Peebles, and there's a building right behind Don that sold for around $2 or $3 billion.
Billion?
Billion dollars for a single skyscraper. $2 or $3 billion.
Wow,
heart out, Donald Sterling.
Wow.
$2 or $3 billion for a single building. We won't even get into other buildings like 30 Rock, Empire State. Hell, the New World Trade building that they built. It cost, $1.5 billion to build it and to sell that thing?
Yes.
The bidding is going to start at $4 or $5 billion when it's time to sell things.
Mm-hmm.
If somebody ever wants to buy it, it's going to be $4 or $5 billion. You're going to see a bunch of Arabs show up.
Always.
You're
going to
see
always.
A bunch
that's
of Arabs
the,
show
secret.
Up with a briefcase full of money, talking about, I'll take the big skyscraper on the left. I'm just telling you right now, that's how it's going to go down. And the white folks are going to be right there to catch the money. But the reason why I bring that up is, understand, when you set off two or three of those economic bombs, what's going to happen? Right
people
there,
starve.
You are going to create a situation where black folk are living in an apartment building that right now the value of that apartment building is $4 or $5 million. They finished building a new condo on the next block, not even on the one you're on the next block. That condo is going to raise the values of everything for the next three or four blocks.
Exactly.
Now, if I set off, and I call it a bomb because if I dropped a bomb somewhere and it wiped out the people for three or four blocks, what would you call it? You would call it a bomb.
Yes, a bomb and the radius of the bomb. Right?
Yes, the blast radius wiped out every person for three or four blocks.
Sir.
That's a damn bomb. And what I'm saying is that when they set off an economic bomb like a condominium, then it's going to triple or quadruple or in some cases quintuple the property values. And your rent went from $1,000 a month to $3,000 a month. And they tell you that you've got until the end of the year. Well, that's a hell of a thing if that condominium opened in October and your lease expires in December. That's a hell of a situation to be in.
Right. Yeah, you know, same thing happened because I can tell you for a fact in 2003 when Dr. Claude Anderson decided to do the African Town in Detroit, and I watched that intently. You know, I was right there watching it and seeing what was going on, what was going to develop, and man, they fought him every step of the way, every step of the way, and he asked for 45 acres. And what happened was one of the places that was just sold for like $400,000, the old Packer plant in Detroit, was sold to, I think, a Peruvian. And the part that got to me the most was how all the major black city, mayor, city council, And then you had, of course, the merchants, all the different merchants that's in Detroit that's not black, you know, majority not black owned, you know, the business that we cater to the most. And how they, you know, did what they did. Now, even with Magic Johnson, the same thing, he wanted to do a theater during that time. And then the same area that he wanted to do a theater in at the time, they about to build a new hockey stadium. Now he got caught up with Dan Gilbert, I think, of Quicken Loans. You know, he's a part of that group. And so now he got a piece of the old state fair. And this the whole thing, how they – it's like a monopoly board, you know. It's like they really be playing games with people's lives. So I understand fully what you're talking about, brother. I'm right there with you. I understand fully.
Now, who was the mayor of Detroit when Claude Anderson wanted to open that distributor?
It was Kwame Kilpatrick. Kwame was in the office.
And where is Kwame Kilpatrick today?
He's in jail.
You see how white supremacy repays you your loyalty? You see how white supremacy rewards your meritorious manumission? You see how
they pay? Yes, sir.
Do you see how white supremacy pays the wages of sin?
They picked them well. I was also in the military too, so I'm telling you, brother, I'm very well aware of counterintelligence, all that. You know, I'm very well aware of it. And you know, this is my first time calling you. You know, I'm glad to be able to get the message across. Just, you know, I understand fully where you're coming from. You know, I'm right there with you. I'm shooting, you know, that whole vibe and core is right there, brother. Right there with you. Very well aware of what you're talking about.
I'm just saying, for anybody out there who thinks they're going to find a room full of powerful white people and you are going to sabotage the efforts of black people to occupy a third category, understand something. Kwame Kilpatrick got his Halle Berry wake-up call.
Yes, he did.
That is how white supremacy rewards their black friends.
Yes, they do.
Because the goal is not to have slave niggers and pet niggers. The goal is to have no niggers.
Right.
Let me say that again for the coons out there who missed it. The goal is not to have pet niggers and slave niggers. The goal is to have zero niggers. And the pet niggers are simply a tool that is used to perpetuate and accomplish that purpose.
And that's the whole key.
See himself
that's
as a
the
tool.
Whole key.
Well, a tool doesn't see himself as a tool. A tool sees himself as a partner.
Exactly.
A tool thinks that he is a partner. And you see, it's a hell of a thing when you're sitting at the dinner table and your hammer tries to pull up a seat at the dinner table.
You're right. It ain't going to happen.
Mr. Hammer, you are a tool. Or if you're a plumber, if you're a plumber and your auger, and you all need to go look up what an auger does, but let me tell you, don't want it pulling up at the dinner table with you. Your auger wants to sit at the dinner table with you. Mr. Auger, you're a tool. You are a tool, Mr. Auger. You are an instrument of use.
Exactly.
And then you are removed when your usefulness has expired. But you do not have a seat at the table.
No.
It's not the way it works.
Exactly.
You don't get a seat at the table of power. We use you to accomplish our goal, and when the goal is accomplished, you go out with the rest of them.
Exactly.
You know, we've got a trash compactor. Think about this. You have a garbage compactor or in your sink, you know, you got a trash compactor in your sink.
Right.
Now, what do you do with that thing? What do you do with trash compactors? What do? You have trash, and then you throw the trash away.
Exactly.
You dispose of it. But what do you do with a trash compactor that goes bad?
You replace it.
Well, what do you do with that one, though? You're saying get a new one, but what do you do with the one that you don't want anymore? What do you do with that?
Oh, you throw it away.
Okay, so the trash compactor's job is to help you dispose of waste you don't want.
Exactly.
And then when that compactor no longer serves a purpose, you put it out with the rest of it. It goes out with the rest. Because the goal is not to have pet garbage. The goal is no garbage. Mm-hmm. Compactor is mm-hmm. simply an instrument that we use to promote our to accomplish that goal.
Okay.
And isn't it amazing when the trash forgets its position?
Of course. Of course. And I get your analogy. It's really cool because, see, what happens, even with that, because most people, you know, like I was going back to looking at the eyes of the city or the staff of the mayor of Detroit. I'm telling you, brother, when I watch some of the news, it's like watching a movie. It's weird. It's like zombie-like. You know, it's kind of hard to explain, but it's like, man, you know, they robots. That's the word I'm looking for. Robots, you know, and the mayor, I'm very familiar with him because he used to be a prosecutor, Wayne County prosecutor. And this brother, he's politically savvy, you know, and whatever the case is, most people in Detroit would just, 89% black folk around in there, 85% have no clue and don't care. You know, I grew up in the city. I lived there majority of my life. You know, I lived in other places, of course, but I was born and raised. And I've watched it, you know, deteriorate. And, you know, when you trying to, you know, you're being conscious and aware. And sometimes, you know, you have to work on a different level. You just work with people that you know, you don't have to get all out there and, you know, beat the drum and be all on TV and then next thing you're going to be bought out. I ain't going to be bought out. That's what I'm saying for me, you know. Very well aware, college educated, all that stuff, you know, all that along the path. And once I start getting into that thing of what was going on in the higher places, just very uncomfortable with it. It's like, you know what, I don't think I can deal with that. But let me, you know, get back and observe and make sure, you know, my ass is covered. You know what I'm saying? So when it's time to do whatever needs to be done, ready and prepared. That's you know, that's my goal. You know, that's that was my purpose, you know. So I've survived so far doing that.
Well, for the 21st Hello? Century, the only black people who are going to matter are those who are going to be thriving.
Going
Survival
to do what?
Not, those who are going to be thriving. Survival is not. Survival is not going to be an option in the future.
Uh-huh, uh-huh.
Because right now,
I'm right there with you, brother.
This thing is shaping right up right now to be a situation where we're going to see mm-hmm. The goal right now is the institution of a new slave class.
Yes, yes.
There are a bunch of people who are currently occupying the slave class and do not mm-hmm. know it. This is what I meant by they've engineered a system now that will entrap, enslave, and exterminate people, whichever mm-hmm. one they want, or all of the above,
mm-hmm.
in the most humane manner possible. They are doing it in a way that makes it seem like it was your choice.
Yeah, psychological warfare.
They're doing
propaganda.
It in a way that makes it seem like you actually chose that.
Exactly. And then what the thing is that they use other people as a buffer. And that's the thing about the immigration thing. They bring people in to be a buffer to keep our eyes off of what they're doing, you know. See, my job consists of basically from all over the world. I mean, I didn't say all over, but I mean, I'm talking to the Chaldeans, of course, Arabs, Albanians, people from Bangladesh, Vietnam, Korea. You know, that's my job. You know, I mean, as far as dealing with them on a daily, I'm able to interact with these folk. But I watch their language. You know, I watch their body language. I can't speak none of their languages. But I've been working at a particular place for 7 years. I had another job, the same thing, you know, in the suburbs. And, you know, I watch all the businesses and all the customers that come through and, you know, dealing with whoever and all of the tenants and the clients and dealing with them on a different level. And they, you know, they try to, you know, ask me questions. It's like, I'm just doing my job. You know what I'm saying? You know, so... I'm right there with you, brother. I got other things I'm working on. Besides, you know, I'm at a place where the good part about it, when you're talking about survival, the job that I work at, I'm able to do what I want to do as long as I do what I have to do, because my boss be gone. She don't care. Sometimes she be in Florida, for the doggone winter. I'm able to plan and strategize and do whatever need to be done. She don't care, but I do.
Here's the thing.
You know what I'm saying, brother?
The problem is, mm-hmm. if you're still calling somebody your boss and you're not looking in the mirror when you say that, that's a problem.
I got you, brother. I got you. Yes, it is. But still, thank you for correcting me on that.
Before we do anything else here, it is important mm-hmm. for people to understand. Have you given mm-hmm. your contribution for 7 a.m. yet?
Not yet, but I'm working on it.
See, your work.
I've been I'm telling you something, brother.
I've been working on it for a while, maybe about a month now.
And you know, like you, of course, you have to vet and see who's real, who's not. You know, there's quite a few. You know, I've contributed to a couple of causes, so I have to make sure that okay, this thing, you know, is going to go. You know, the contribution is going to go. For the purpose, you know, for the real purpose. You understand what I'm saying, brother? But I'm glad that you mentioned that 7 a.m. to me, because I did see it. The link came on. I watched it. I think I even commented on it. I'm almost sure I did. And so, I'm ready. But the talk of you is like, it's cool. You know, that's dynamic. Yes, sir. So, yeah.
Now, do you understand that you're not helping yourself right now?
Okay. Now, okay, what do you mean by that?
Do you understand that you're not helping yourself right now?
Okay, can you clarify that?
So, you actually need it to be explained to you.
Yes, I do.
Please tell me how far a people are going to progress when their leaders, the men, are constantly handing out excuses.
Okay, so you asked me, did I contribute to you yet? I said no. And then my explanation wasn't an excuse. It was to make sure that, you know, if I contribute to it, that it was for real. It wasn't an excuse. And as I said before, I'm glad to be able to talk to you, you know. And then when you mentioned 7 a.m.
You've been talking mm-hmm. to me, but you've been talking to me.
No, this is what I'm trying to get at. When you mentioned 7 a.m., it was like, wow, okay, this brother, you know, and the link and everything that you mentioned. It's like, cool. And then you asked me if I contributed yet. It was like, no, not yet. Okay?
This isn't the first time we've talked about this.
Excuse me?
This is not our first time talking about this.
Oh, through True Black Power, the Twitter account? Through the Twitter account?
I want you to do yourself a favor now, okay? Because very, very important that as black men, we have to set the example, okay? And when you talk to somebody week after week and you've got a bunch of excuses, I didn't do this to put you on the spot. I did this as an example to the younger black men.
Oh, this is my first time calling, brother. This is my first time calling. This is my first time calling this number and participating in the program.
I think that might not be completely correct.
No, yes, it's correct. It's correct. It's correct.
I don't like people putting people out.
It's okay. But I guarantee you, I don't know if this is the first time I participated in this particular number.
A lot of people think that I don't keep up with stuff. I keep up with things in a labyrinthal way because it's the kind of thing. It's what helps me to avoid having a troller situation on my broadcast.
I agree, brother.
But what I am going to say here is I didn't do it to put you on the spot. That wasn't my purpose.
It's okay, whether you have or not. I just wanted to explain to you that this is my first time calling.
Let's not say whether we have or not. Let's not say that because I actually don't like the idea of putting grown men on the spot. I don't do that. What I do believe, however, is that men should lead.
Of course. Of course men should lead. Of course. Of course. You know, the whole bottom line is this, is that, you know, hopefully we on the same page, you know, the participation I wanted to do because, we've been following each other a while on Twitter as far as I've been reading stuff. And like I said before, when you mentioned 7 a.m. when I called, I didn't know. It's like, okay, hey, look, at seven. First of all, it was 7 o'clock the first time, and I tried to get on then, but it was offline or whatever. And then when I seen it again, and I was like, okay, let me call this and see what my man talking about. Okay, first time caller. Maybe I should have mentioned that. But yes, as a man, of course, men should lead. And, of course, you asked me if I contributed to 7 a.m. yet? No, I have not. And
definitely.
As far as an excuse, the thing is that I want to make sure.
I'm not even here to find out. I'm not even here to ask an explanation. I'm not here to ask one. I don't ask people for explanations on anything. I don't ask that at all. When people say they're going to do things, however, part of leadership is making sure that people understand their responsibilities. Because if I said that I was going to do a documentary and then folks catch back up with me later and I'm doing a bunch of hem and hawing and can't show any footage, can't show any proof, can't show anything, see, that's when you have to sit up here and whatnot and try to deflect and get people to watch other things and do everything except give proof of what you yourself are doing. That every time everybody asks you, what are you doing? You have to keep telling them, well, take a look at this guy over here. Well, he's got proof of his. Well, I still don't like it. What are you doing? Don't ask me that.
Exactly.
So, like I say,
that's
the kind of thing right there that should make people's ears go up when they see that. So I believe in teaching by example. I believe in that. And that's a very good habit, I think, for we as black men to develop. Because one of the other parts of Kunin is being happy with a normal life.
Okay. All right. And that's what I'm saying, brother. That's why I called, because it was an invitation on my timeline. Okay, that's what I'm saying. And then, I'm going back to when you mentioned 7 a.m., I was very impressed by it. And then you asked me again, have I contributed to it yet? It was like, no, not yet.
You're being far too defensive. You're being far too defensive.
To what?
You are being far too defensive. Open your ears.
No. That's what I'm trying to get back at, brother. That's what I'm saying. No. It's not being defensive.
I'm telling you. I'm saying it.
See, you're telling me.
You're being far too defensive.
No, you're telling me, man. You asked me, did I contribute, and I said no.
I'm saying what you're saying now. You are being far too defensive now.
Yes. Just say okay and go contribute. Just say okay. It is what it is.
Okay.
Go contribute.
All right. Okay. All right. Yeah, I will.
Everything else beyond that and stuff is like, you know what? Here's the thing about Devontae. Devontae, I want to go a little bit further than what you said. Go ahead and contribute. Or don't.
Right.
Let me just say that right now.
Right.
Go ahead and contribute or don't. However,
this one I'm trying to...
Don't sit here defending yourself either.
I'm not defending myself, man. I'm not defending myself. You're getting it all wrong, man. No, I'm not defending myself.
You spent a whole minute giving explanation.
The whole idea is we're supposed to have a dialogue and a conversation. You asked me a question. I gave you an answer. And now I'm being defensive? No.
No, what I'm saying is that follow-up is the defensiveness.
But that's the whole
thing, man. You already answered the question before. At what point are you going to stop answering the question? Because you already said no. At that point, you've answered the question. Everything else after that is defensive. You've already, as by your own admission, I've already answered the question. I didn't ask you.
No.
The thing is,
when I said no, you went on to another level. You said, well, this is why whatever you were talking about, you know, I need to do whatever. You know, and I was trying. What I was doing was I was saying, hey, look, the reason
me going on to another level. I have a broadcast. It is my job. People come here because they want to hear my thoughts on things. So
brother, and I'm right there with you. I'm right there
one
with
thing
you.
You have.
Yeah,
one thing I understand, a lot of black males are raised around feminine energy. Really, I understand that. But y'all y'all have to stop with the big mama talking all the time thing. You really have to.
Oh my goodness. Come on, man. That's not cool.
If you hear me talking and then you start talking, then that tells you what you're doing. I can't make it any more clear.
It's the same way you have done.
It's not the same way. You know why it's not the same way? Can you tell me what kind of microphone you have in front of you?
The phone microphone I have.
What you meant to say was you don't have one.
Listen, brother, the thing is,
I do not have a microphone, and that means I'm the organizer of this. So what that means is I'm not going to fight you to be heard on my own broadcast. I'm not going to do that. I tell you that you've made an explanation. Okay, I got that.
Right.
I have the ability to interject. I can do that because people like the way that I organize my broadcast. Now, if you start your own broadcast, I got videos out there that will tell you how to do it. You're welcome to give it a shot. But that's the reason why I can do that. You, on the other hand, are not interjecting. You are just interrupting, because if you had to say was so incredibly prescient, other people would be calling you up to hear it.
Exactly. Okay,
That's your first clue. Now, here's the second clue. The second clue is that nobody would have to ask you any questions at all if what you were saying was so prescient, because the two guys before you, did you notice I didn't have to ask them any questions at all?
Okay, I got you.
So you see, it's not a matter of the rest of that you're talking about there. People come here because they want to hear my particular take on these things, which is what I give to people.
Right.
They also want to hear the manner in which I organize it, which is what I give people, uncompromising. But the other thing is that we also have a credo here and a statement of beliefs of how we conduct ourselves as people. And so for that reason, I ask the things I ask when I do. And like I say, a few alarm bells have gone off there. Now, in this case right here, you can do. You cannot do. You can say yes. You can say no. Say whatever the above is. I've made my point there, and that's why I was saying, brother, you're way too defensive at this point because you are still answering the question. Even after the answer, you are still trying to answer for something that I didn't even go into. You see, I was not talking to you. That was not me going to something else. I was not talking to you when I said that. That was for the benefit of all the other black males listening.
Because
it is important that they understand that I can tell them about behaviors all day. When I hear one, I need to point it out to them and say, by the way, that was what I was just talking about right there. Just like with the people called in last night. 50 years old, but not comporting herself in a manner that is befitting somebody of that age range. And I call that on what also because I want the young females listening to understand, ladies, next time we point out a problem, that's what we're referring to.
Okay. I understand, brother. Yeah, my apologies. You know, I get it. I mean, I get the core where you're coming from. You know, like I said, first time caller, so, you know, decided to learn the format. So I get it.
Now I don't put people on the spot. I don't do things like that. For 7 a.m. we have just done tremendous with it. It has been I'm not gonna say it's everything I could have hoped for, but it was everything I thought it would be. So understand something. I am not asking you. Nobody here is asking you, and nobody is going to. We don't do that here. What we do is we have given a rare opportunity. This is a rare opportunity because understand something. In black society, in particular black men, we got a lot of cowards out there, dude. The reason why we have so many cowards out there is because these were men who, when they were younger and could have done something that would have mattered, they didn't do it.
Mm-hmm.
Exactly. Everybody in Oakland wants to call themselves a Black Panther today. And isn't it amazing? Because I've talked to Black Panthers. I've talked to them on this broadcast, and they'll sit there and tell you. Isn't it amazing that we were out there in the streets fighting the police? Nobody was a Black Panther. Now, today, a whole bunch of senior citizens run around talking about we were Black Panthers. Couldn't find none of these folks out there, but now everybody wants to be one today. Everybody wants to say they're fighting white supremacy. But the truth is, most of your parents are liars and cowards. Most of them, when Bull Connor came rolling through, most of them were hiding under their chairs, cowering. You had a bunch of black folk and white folk who came in from out of state.
I know, on the real.
Marching in Selma, marching in Nashville, marching in Louisiana. Bunch of white folk and black folk out of the state. Why? Because the people who lived there were cowards. And now they are in their old age trying to convince people that they were not cowards. But the problem is the young folk are asking for documentation now and can't find them.
Right.
What's your credentials?
Exactly. Right.
We're asking them for credentials, and they're not doing that.
Right.
7 a.m. is your opportunity to gain your credentials. Just like Hidden Colors. In my mind, Hidden Colors is an opportunity to gain credentials.
Okay.
And that is what this has been given for. I've got Dr. Claude Anderson's book sitting here.
Right.
I've got them sitting here. So when they ask, what are my credentials? I don't have any kids, but my kids, the day that I have them, they will be able to look at Dad's bookshelf and see these are his credentials.
On the real, right. On the real.
This is what this man put into himself. Didn't do it after you got here. This is a way of life. This is the real damn deal. Everybody wishes they had a photograph with Malcolm X today. The man wasn't hiding himself.
Of course not.
You could have had that back then. You didn't have it because you didn't want it back then. You didn't want it back then because you figured niggas gonna lose. And I'm not gonna be one of the folk who we challenged white supremacy and lost. And then Malcolm won. Now Negroes trying to run to the other side of the fence. I was with you the whole time. Didn't mention Malcolm's name until Spike Lee's movie came out. But trying to convince the children of my generation that they were with him the whole time. Ain't trying to hear that, man. Understand something. Show me your bank account statement with your transactions, and I will show you what you believe in.
Right.
Old black folk prided themselves on how scary they could be.
Right.
I don't have any respect for that. They prided themselves on how scary they could be.
Mm-hmm.
I don't pride myself on that. And I don't want a group of black males around me who are not priding themselves on the same thing. I would rather have the 800 people who have contributed to 7 a.m. I would rather the entirety of my audience, the thousands of people who listen live and record it, I'd rather find out who the 800 are and just have them. And nobody will say to you what I just said, because that would offend someone. They'd be scared to death. Well, maybe I can make it up. Damn that. I would rather have the people who have proven that they are built to march. I would rather have that the special forces, the few who make the cut, I'd rather have them than the thousands of people standing in the stands cheering.
Yeah, on the real, of course.
I'd much rather have that. And it's not about, and it's not about 7 a.m. 7 a.m. was paid for. I did that myself. You all saw it. Hell, I was putting out footage long before. I had people asking to contribute to 7 a.m. and me for a year saying, no, you can't. For a year.
Actually,
everybody will tell you for a year, people were contacting me saying that they wanted to contribute, and I said no. They wanted to contribute before I ever left to go do it, and I said no. I didn't say maybe later. I said no. No, you can't. I'm doing this. I don't need you for that. Got back, started promoting it myself. Don't need you for that. And then I said, but you know what? The people who want their names I want to make this a part of history for the people who want their names on it. Because understand, Coonery does not want documentation. We've been talking about Coonery tonight. Among the other, Coonery don't like intelligence. Coonery doesn't like defying white supremacy. Coonery doesn't like civilized behavior. It wants savagery. And one more thing, Coonery doesn't like documentation. Coonery doesn't like to have its name signed to something. That's why it shuffles its feet and goes back and forth. Coonery does not want proof of anything. Coonery wants to say, I'm a hoe and a queen. Coonery wants to say, right. I'm a coward and a warrior. Coonery wants to say, I'm a thug and a scholar. Coonery does not want documentation. Right. You see, you want to make a coon run? Show them a picture of themselves. Doesn't matter what it is. Just show them a picture of themselves and say, look what I saw. And watch Coonery go running. I was right there with the Panthers. Look what I saw. Beep. Straight out the door. Coonery does not like documentation. I don't have a problem with documentation. People, understand something. Understand one thing. Nobody asks me where my documentary is.
Right.
Nobody is asking me where 7 a.m. is, except to say, when can I buy it? But nobody is asking me, is it going to be, what's it going to be? I got documentation. Nobody is going to ask me where I stand for on black, where I stand on black empowerment. Nobody is going to ask me that. If they do, they're an idiot who just landed in from the moon. I've got hundreds of broadcasts, if not thousands at this point. I've got my documentation. My question to you and everybody else out there, I've got my documentation. Do you have yours? Do you have yours? That's the only thing I ask everybody else out there. I got mine. Do you have yours?
I do.
I've got my documentary, buddy. Can you get one?
Well, as far as documentary,
I've got oh, God. Seriously, dude. Devontae.
I don't want to laugh, Jason.
I mean, that was a rhetorical. That was a rhetorical question. That was a rhetorical question. Really, I was not even addressing that to you, and he jumped right up. Well, see, what happened was, brother, you are too defensive. Really?
Oh, come on, man. Okay.
That question was not even addressed to you. That was just a rhetorical question.
Okay. I got it.
Jason, can I just say something?
Lesson received.
Good.
Yes,
that's what I was going to ask. You're learning a lesson right now, sir. You're just learning a lesson right now.
Lesson received.
See, understand
lesson
something.
Lesson learned.
As black men, the problem is that so many black men are powerless and weak. And what happens is they don't understand that running your mouth ain't power. Running your mouth is a biological function. Donald Sterling was not concerned with being heard. He wanted power. You see, Coonery and Buffoonery ran its mouth for the first 2 months of 2013. I put out one video, Lie Machine, and Coonery and Buffoonery was quiet. I didn't run my mouth. Buddy, this ain't about what I'm going to say. It's about what I'm going to do. And when I was done doing something, buddy, you could have heard cotton candy falling on cotton. Real life. It's not about what I'm going to say. It's about what I'm going to do. And as black men, we've gotten it into our minds that vocal power and sexual power and consumer power are real powers. as opposed to biological and financial functions. Talking is a financial, is a biological function. Going to the bathroom is a biological function. Sex is a biological function. Getting two people of your choosing to have sex on camera in front of you, that's power. Oh, did I just hurt a bunch of people's feelings out there? Because you see, the hoes and hood rats thought they had power by having sex with people. Sorry, you slut, that's not power.
Wow.
You see, you having sex is not power. Getting other people to have sex for your benefit, that is power. Playing basketball is not power. Getting other people to play basketball for your benefit, that's power. Being able to talk is not power. Being able to get other people to shut up with what you said, that is power. I hope everybody out there taking down notes tonight. I hope y'all got your pens and your pads and your Microsoft Word, and you ought to be just sitting there just tapping away, because I am trying to give this intermediate course in power to y'all tonight. I'm trying to. I'm over here sweating. I'm straining. Forgive me. I was raised in the South, a little Southern Baptist preacher coming out in me. But what I am going to say here is understand something. We as black men need to understand what real power is. A black man drooling over Rihanna, that ain't power. And Rihanna, you slut, wearing a see-through Picaho dress is not power either. The white men who sent you out there to dress like a whore and to be ass naked in front of the world, that is power. What you doing ain't power. The white men who sent you out there to destroy your reputation to your children for your whole life, that's power. Getting you to wear a dress ain't power. Getting you to throw away and destroy your whole credibility and dignity as a female, that is power. That's how the West was won. And as a black man, I'm trying to get that kind of power. Some folks say I'm there. I'm not there yet. I ain't there yet. Trying to get there, though. Trying to get it like that. But I understand what needs to be done at this point. Now I just got understanding and getting there are two separate things. But understand, I'm put to the floor to get there. But
right,
I'm not about imitation power. I'm not about diet power. I want fat. I want full fat, all preservatives, no additives, completely uncondensed, unprocessed, unfiltered power. That's what I'm after. And
power and
coonery can't ride together. You never saw a powerful coon. That is a contradiction in terms. The mighty coon, the powerful coon, the most influential sellout in America. He don't get no props. That fella don't get any shine. He wants it, he can't get it. And as black men, we need to stop cultivating those types of weak behaviors. We need to stop doing that. As black men, we should start cultivating the ability to listen. We need to start cultivating that. But you know where that begins? That begins by acknowledging that we're speaking to somebody who knows more than us. And that's a very hard thing for black males, males in particular, but black males in specific. That's a very hard thing for black males to do. Because then you have to admit to yourself that I'm not on his level. I'm not on his level.
Right, right. I feel you, brother. Yeah, I feel you on that.
See, if Jay-Z called in tonight, understand something. I would ask a couple of questions and shut the hell up and just listen.
Mm-hmm.
When a man's worth when a man's worth $400 million, if you're not worth $400 million or approaching that, maybe you should be quiet and listen. Maybe he knows something that you don't. Maybe I don't want to go the way that he did. Maybe I don't want to do it like that. But he wouldn't be where he is if he didn't know something I don't know. Maybe there is some knowledge that he has that I can adapt and benefit for myself, because you trying to get where he's at. See, coonery and buffoonery struggles to stay relevant. Coonery and buffoonery does not want to discuss numbers. I can discuss numbers. Let's go to Indiegogo. I will discuss numbers with you. Let's go to 7 a.m. and the budget for it. I will discuss numbers for you. Let's go to footage and documentation. I will discuss numbers with you. Let's discuss numbers. I don't want to discuss opinions. I'm going to let y'all in on a little bit of inside information. Do you know how long the conversation was to go see all the people that I went to go see? Do you know how long the conversation was? I'm not going to go into salacious detail. I will tell you that the conversation for each person on average, 4 minutes. I know I timed them.
Okay. That's a good. Mm-hmm.
That was for the people that I actually had to call.
Okay.
For several of them, I didn't even have to call them.
Mm-hmm.
They wanted to know, was business going to get done? And once that was firmly established, I just got a date and a time to be there.
Right, right.
Now, I'm not going to say that everybody can do it, because everybody can't do that. You know, y'all can't just sit up here and call these people up and talk to them for a few minutes and whatnot. I mean, there's more to it than that, and I'm not going to go into a bunch of details about, because it would just bore the hell out of all of you. And it really doesn't matter if you're not trying to talk to these people. So obviously, yeah, there's some things I can't go into huge details about, because it'd just be laborious. But my point is, when it was nutcracking time, wasn't no big, long, drawn-out conversation to be had.
They did
not want me to call up and run my mouth for some unlimited amount of time.
Right. About business, right.
They wanted you to just go ahead and get to it, and that was it. And as black men, we have cultivated the art of talking for the purposes of distracting people from what we do not know.
Right, right, right.
Black women try to mask the personality that they do not have with sex. Black men try to mask what they do not know with babbling.
Right.
That if I just continue talking, people will not recognize that I don't actually know what I'm talking about. And what I'm saying is, as black men, I want us to start cultivating the ability to know things. Just start cultivating the ability to know things. I find out that the more people know, the less they have to talk. And the more things they show you.
That's for real.
You know why I'm not afraid to offend anybody? I'm not afraid to offend anybody because the people on my level are not offended.
Right.
The people on my level are not offended. The people who are not on my level have to yell and scream and curse, and I hate Jason Black.
Huh.
People on my level are not offended. the dudes moving the numbers that I'm talking about, they're not offended.
Right.
So if what I say or how I comport myself offends you, I ain't got to worry.
Right.
I ain't got to worry.
Right.
I'll let you have the last word, brother.
Oh, I appreciate, you know, the whole conversation, man. You know, it was cool and enlightening. So,
thank you very much for checking in with us.
I appreciate it. I appreciate the invitation. I appreciate, you know, listening and lessons learned.
Well, thank you very much for checking in with us. Please do so again. Now, just for the record here, I have a couple of people who are calling from unlisted numbers. I do not take calls from unlisted numbers. I was playing around earlier. I was going to tell them that I don't take calls from unlisted numbers and hang up on them. They didn't answer the phone. I do not take calls from unlisted numbers. So the two people who are on the line who are calling from unlisted numbers, I don't take calls from unlisted people. What you can do is if you are an overseas caller and you're calling like over Skype or something like that, you should be able to just go to Ustream. Not Ustream, the blog talk. And there's a Skype icon there that you can click on. And that should allow you to dial in with your Skype, and we can see your ID. That way, if I need to block you, I can. And or if you are calling and you can't call some other way, you need to post up in the chat room who you are so that we will know. Because I don't want to miss my overseas people. I don't want that. And I know it's hella expensive calling internationally, so I'm not trying to sit here and bog people. Except for Laverne, apparently. She's got incredible international minutes. But for everybody else, you know, I'm not trying to ostracize anybody. But at the same time, just to make sure that you understand, I don't take calls from unlisted numbers. So, okay, they just hung up there, which is fine. I'm not trying to offend anybody. But what I am saying is that I don't take calls from unlisted numbers because, of course, I did that actually last summer. I did it one time last summer when after the Zimmerman verdict. And there was a bunch of white guys calling in over Skype and calling in from unlisted numbers. And they were the ones who were talking about nigger the whole time. So like I say, that was the only time I actually did take calls like that. And it happened exactly the way we were saying. If you're going to be a fool or whatever, on the Black Channel, I require you to... You're going to stand up. You're not going to be anonymous. We're not going to allow anonymous coonery here. If you act stupid, if you play on my phone, I give out your number. That way, in case people need to check with you or whatever, we'll have an opportunity to speak with you. But I'm not going to have anything like that. Not going to have anything like that. Now, I do have one person here on the line that I do want to speak with here. Hello, birthday girl.
Oh, God, I can't talk. Hello.
I thought you'd find that amusing. That was Mona Lachey. No, she didn't want to talk right that moment, which is fine. That was Mona Lachey. I'm so glad she wasn't doing anything that we didn't want to hear. You know how it is when sometimes folks are doing stuff on the phone you don't want to hear. Or at least you don't want the world hearing that. I mean, if some dude is sucking your toes, I understand that. You don't want that being broadcast to the internet. I understand that. I'm going to wrap this up here in just a moment. I got to be short here tonight. In all honesty, everybody, I'm going to be short here tonight because I want to get back to editing on 7 a.m. So I'm not going to be doing this as long as I ordinarily would, but I will be back tomorrow night, 7 p.m. Central Time, same black time, same black channel. And definitely for those of you who have not been, you want to go to 7ammovie.com. Click in the middle of the screen where it says click here to get involved. That will take you to our Indiegogo. It'll be a short film that just shows you some of what we're doing. And I want everybody to understand that this is really going to be our last best chance to make a difference in the trajectory of where black society is going. Because nobody else is talking about what we're doing. And I want to say a very heartfelt and very deep thank you to everybody, to every man, to every woman, to every child, to every person. I want to say a heartfelt thank you to everybody who has done something, for everybody who has gotten up and gotten involved with 7 a.m. I want to say thank you to everyone who you put your Friday night coonin' and your Saturday night turned up and your weekend buffoonery to the side. And you said, you know what? I want my name counted with those people, with black empowerment. I want to be a part of something bigger than myself. So I want to thank everybody who put themselves on the line. I want to thank everyone who now your bank account and your transactions now show and document to the world what you believe in and what you really value. I want to thank all of you for joining together with this sincere movement to honor the life, not the death, but the life, Dr. John Henrik Clark, the life of Malcolm X, the life of Medgar Evers, the life of Huey Newton, the life of Nelson Mandela, the life of Marcus Garvey, Nat Turner, Denmark Vesey. I want to thank all of you for showing your parents that you're not afraid. I can go on as long as I want to. I want to thank all of you for showing your parents you weren't afraid, for showing the world that you won't bow down, and for showing white supremacy that you found something worth living for and worth dying for and worth sacrificing for. I want to thank everybody, all of you out there, have helped make the promotional efforts of 7 a.m. not a resounding success, but a mind-blowing success. Do you know how many people we passed? Do you know that we passed not just the con men and the frauds, the tools of white supremacy? We passed, I mean, they were talking about Issa Rae like it was incredible, and she had Black Enterprise magazine clapping for her. The Black Channel and 7 a.m. did it with nobody talking about us. Because we represent the streets. Goldie Taylor just hit her goal. She wanted $53,000. Major media figure. Just hit her goal. Just hit it. We passed where she just got to 2 weeks ago. We got major media figures with major corporate backing, and we're looking at them in the rearview mirror, past them like Jesse Owens, blazing by the German track team. That was what you did. Your name is on that. I want to thank Better Black and people like him who have been relentless about promoting 7 a.m., relentless about making sure that it's across social media. And if everybody did a tenth of what he did, this would be so much bigger than it is right now. I want to thank all the people who have wanted to be producers, executive producers, associate producers, and who wanted to come and meet me. I'm nobody special. I'm just a guy from Louisiana with a microphone and a camera. I'm just a guy. And that somebody would actually want to pay money to see me, I can't tell you how unbelievably humbling that is. Believe me when I say this, I will be more nervous to meet you than you will be to meet me. Okay, maybe not that nervous, but you get the idea. I want to thank all the people who took money out of their paychecks, because you got bills, but guess what? You're going to have bills next week too. But for all the people who took a part of their lives out to support 7 a.m., I want to say thank you. For every person over PayPal, every credit card number, every debit card number, every person who's passed the link around, everybody who you took this to heart to make this a success, I want to thank you. I want to thank all the people who, in the words of Jesus Christ, they didn't have much, but they gave more than most people did because they didn't have much to give, and they gave what they had. I had people give $5, $10. To the people who had more and that was all you gave, but for the people who you had to make a choice between gas money and 7 a.m., and you realized that if your children were going to have a better life, the message has got to get out. I want to thank you. I want to thank you. I want to thank you for that $15, that $25 that came from a place where you didn't have a lot to give, but you were not going to let the fact that you didn't have a lot to give prevent you from giving at all. I want to thank you for that. I want to thank every single person who has made themselves vested in 7 a.m. I want to thank you for doing what just a few weeks ago the world thought was impossible. I want to thank you for honoring our ancestors and our elders and our martyrs, that neither their deaths nor, more importantly, their lives were in vain. And I want to thank every single one of you for that. 7 a.m. is not about one guy. It's not about me. It's about you and me and us and we. It is about what being black is going to mean in the 21st century and beyond. And if there will be a black in the 21st century and beyond. I want to thank all the young men. All the young men out there who you thought it was all over. I want to thank you for putting some skin in the game. I want to thank all the black females out there, all the young women who you weren't really sure what to think, but you stepped out on faith. And you took this chance to gain the courage to become uncompromising. I want to thank you. I want to thank all of you because I know it's not easy. You know what easy is? Easy is going along with everyone else. Easy is twerking because the other girls are doing it. Sagging because the other guys are doing it. Sitting down and doing nothing because everyone else is doing it. That's easy. Let me tell you what hard is. Hard is watching everybody else cooning and buffooning, jerking and twerking, sagging, being a fool, being a hoe, and still holding on to your convictions that I'm going to be something better. That's hard. Deciding that you want to be something better. That's difficult. That's hard. That's not easy. I want to thank all of you who have supported 7 a.m. with your dollars and with your shares and with your likes. I want to thank all of you for putting yourselves out there because I know you were discouraged. I know that you were apprehensive. I know that a lot of you got burned by the fraud. And I know that a lot of you were worried. And I want to thank you for putting that faith in me. I want to thank you for putting that kind of faith in me. And now I feel all the weight. I feel all the burden. I feel all the pressure of the march of history and the faith and responsibility that you've placed on me, that you really do believe this, and that you want our tomorrow as Africans to be better, much better than yesterday and much better than today. I want to thank all of you for showing that the time for talk is over. I want to thank everyone for demonstrating that the time for talk is over, that the 21st century is going to see the rebirth of the African worldwide. And I just hope that 7 a.m. is going to be a small part of that. For everybody who is out there listening, change doesn't happen from talking. Change happens from doing. Change isn't sexy. Change doesn't get a pat on the back and a cheer from people. Change happens in a quiet little corner of your home. Change happens in the front seat of your car at a red light. Change happens while sitting at your desk at your job like you do every day. Change happens by you doing everything that you usually do every day except one thing. And that one thing is what changes everything. That's how change happens. If you are a young black person today, if you are a black person anywhere listening to this broadcast, maybe you don't like the way that I say everything. Maybe you're not used to a black man speaking with such confidence and assuredness. Maybe you're not used to a black man who says, this is what I'm against. Because that scares you. the idea that a black man will not be bowing down to you. That frightens you. Maybe it's you who's wrong. Maybe we're not supposed to be here bowing down. Maybe we're supposed to be here standing up. Maybe we're not supposed to be here toeing the line. Maybe we're supposed to be here troubling the waters. Maybe we're not supposed to be sitting here quiet. Maybe we're supposed to be here shaking up everything. Maybe that's what we're supposed to be doing. I want you to take 7 a.m. as your opportunity. Hold it to your bosom. I want you to take it to your children and understand that 7 a.m. is not just my legacy. 7 a.m. is yours. 7 a.m. is going to be that moment in history where we said enough. Because understand something. The spook who sat by the door didn't change the world when it came out. It helped. It started doing that 20 years later. Sometimes change happens quickly. Most times it happens at a glacial pace. But nothing ever happens if you don't get up and do. We're entering the last week of the Indiegogo. I'll stop it when I feel like stopping it. So why wait another day? Why wait another day? Maybe I don't say everything the way that you would say it, but you know what? We spent so much time trying to make people comfortable with things they should not be comfortable with. Maybe we should spend more time making people uncomfortable. I want to thank everyone who has gotten involved. And for everyone who hasn't, understand, this isn't my chance. This is yours. This is your chance to make something happen. And if you give that chance up because you thought there were better things to do, just understand, one day there's going to be a little pair of brown eyes sitting in front of you, and they are going to come head to head with white supremacy in all of its ugliness, viciousness, and atrocity. And they are going to look to you for an example of how do I deal with life in the face of white supremacy. They're going to start asking you questions about your life. How do I deal with this coon at my job, Dad? Mom, how do I deal with this Negro bedwitch? How do I do it? And you're going to want to turn on that pro-black switch. You're going to turn on, but you won't be able to. You won't be able to because you spent your life trying not to be seen. It's time to get in the arena. It's time to pick up your sword. Lift up your shield and take a stand for your people. The time for talk is over. For Marcus, Malcolm, Medgar, Mandela, and me, no more talk. Go to 7ammovie.com and get involved. We will see you tomorrow night at 7 p.m. Central. Same black time, same black channel. And this concludes tonight's broadcast of the blackchannel.net radio. I am your host, your brother, your humble servant, the Black Authority. And until next time, brothers and sisters from around the world, remember, black is the future, and the future is uncompromising.